I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
CM Jew, the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new pipe bomb on CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. I'm, of course, CM Jew, a.k.a. Thomas Brown, Tom Mattis, and I welcome you to episode 15 of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, and I am officially back after about a month hiatus. I didn't plan on a month hiatus. I didn't plan for nothing to come out till now for June, but you know, you plan things, and people, they make plans. Everybody has a plan. This guy has a plan, that guy has a plan. But we need chaos. Sorry, I'm being taken over by Heath Ledger's Joker. But no, yeah, I had a plan, as we say, and as all plans, they go to shit. Quite frankly, I went to Anime Next. I enjoyed Anime Next. I had fun at Anime Next. And if you've been checking over on the Absolution Network site, you've seen the photo album, the con specials, both of them, the audio and the video. But, you know, the other thing was, I didn't anticipate how busy I was going to be. Now, I have to explain. Not only did I had work, and work I had to make up as the days leading up to the con, or the 2 weeks leading up to it, I actually didn't get any work. And plus, because of school and the con, I didn't get much work. So I had to put in extra hours at work to make up for that. But it's also the fact that I'm doing summer session at school. And in this summer session, which is split into two parts, the back half, which is going to start in 2 weeks, I'll have two classes, but they're both on the same days. You know, it's two different days. I have classes for each class, but they're both on the same day. They're easy. But for this session, I have two classes. They have three sessions that meet on three individual days. One meets on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and the other meets on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So 4 days out of the 7 days of the week, I have to go to school, and of course, I have to go to work. I have to work to make money. So between all of that and trying to edit all the photos and the audio and everything and all the time, and you know, and I did watch King of the Ring 94 and 96, which was the two ones I was going to review before this review, and the other King of the Ring that will be out this weekend. Hasn't been recorded yet as the time of this recording, but you know, I could just never find time to sit down and record. So because of that, I didn't get to record a CM Jew's Reviews reviewing King of the Ring 94, or I should say 93, excuse me, which is the first, And King of the Ring 96. Little review. I thought both of them were good. As far as pay-per-views go, I mean, King of the Ring 96 was good in regards to being a WWE pay-per-view in 96, which, quite frankly, WWE was getting their ass kicked by WCW at the time. But, you know, 93 was good. The best match of that, of the 93 one, was, without a doubt, the Bret Hart Mr. Perfect match. And, of course, that's also the King of the Ring. That was Hogan's last match, so a lot of significance to that one. And then the 96 one, British Bulldog Shawn Michaels, was a match that kind of wear on. And that was a perfect example of what WWE was at the time, which is they had a lot of good talent, but their matches, like, wore on sometimes. But, of course, that's the, you know, King of the Ring 96, where Austin 3016 was born, which is part of the reason I wanted to review those two. I thought those were two of the most, in a way, significant ones. Which brings us to the two we're going to be reviewing now. Now, tonight, I'm going to review what, quite frankly, I'll be honest, is probably one of my favorite. It is my favorite King of the Ring, I should say. Not one of my favorites. It is one of my favorites. Quite frankly, is my favorite. Now, I know a lot of people say 98. And 98 is fun, and I've been watching 98 because that's the other one we're going to review later this week with guests, mind you. But same point, I wasn't there for 98. I only heard about 98. And for the most part, I saw, up until this past week, the only matches from King of the Ring 98 I ever saw was the Rock Shamrock Final, which I saw on the King of the Ring DVD compilation that came out a couple years ago. Of course, before the network, I guess, release or was in the works, whatever. And of course, the numerous combinations of The Undertaker and all other type of WWE debuts, which have Mick Foley versus Undertaker in Hell in a Cell. Which is the most famous match of that pay-per-view, and well, let's all be honest about that. Because of that, my favorite is the one that I saw, which was King of the Ring 2000, which is tonight's review. King of the Ring 2000 had a lot of interesting storylines going into it. You know, one, you had the Invasion storylines, all of them starting up. Because you had DDP, who had basically revealed the Raw before the pay-per-view that he had been stalking Undertaker's wife. You had Austin having to defend his title against Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho. And as it would be reported in the pay-per-view, you know, there have been rumors that if Jericho or Chris Benoit won, they were going to defect over to Shane McMahon, who had bought WCW a couple months earlier underneath his father, Vince, and was basically reviving it, and basically they were going to defect to WCW. And you know what? It was a great Invasion storyline angle. In this pay-per-view, this is the WWE pay-per-view debut of DDP, of Booker T. You had not only the King of the Ring tournament, in which Kurt Angle was trying to repeat as King of the Ring champion. No King of the Ring. Well, Bret Hart did it, but Bret Hart did it in unofficially, because there were tournaments that are, I guess, are considered King of the Ring, but they weren't King of the Ring. There wasn't a pay-per-view. They didn't consider it the pay-per-view. Bret Hart won the one in 91, and then, you know, he won the official one in 93. As I look at my notes and stalling and finding out where the hell did I leave off, but you know, you had Kurt Angle trying to be the first one ever to repeat as King of the Ring champion, and of course, he had scheduled not only competing in the King of the Ring tournament, but also a straight fight with Shane McMahon, which is, needless to say, very famous. So, with all of that being said, why don't we say we get right into it, shall we? Because, as the tagline says, my muscles ache, my mind is spent, my body is broken, lead me to my throne. As WWE presents King of the Ring 2001, sponsored by Mars Candy Bars, on June 24th, 2001, with an attendance of 17,777 at the Continental Airline Arenas in East Rutherford, New Jersey. ladies and gentlemen, this is King of the Ring 2001. Now, of course, we always talk about the pre-match that isn't shown on WWE Network. Sad for us. And again, WWE Network, I think you really need to get on that because we know you have the footage. I'm not asking you to splice it into, but, you know, it maybe be great to have the Sunday Night Heats and that stuff on the WWE Network one day. So we can, you know, if we're watching pay-per-views or for reviewers like me, we can maybe watch these pre-matches. But in this one, you had Matt Hardy, the European champion, versus Justin Credible for the WWE European Championship, in which Matt Hardy wins. And from what I read, he wins with a help from Lita, who does a diving Hurricane Rana on Justin Credible. But on to our first match proper, we open the pay-per-view not with a match, but with a promo. As DDP comes to the ring, you know, WWE officials have been threatened by Undertaker to basically let DDP come to the ring. And, you know, he cuts a promo about, you know, how you go for the biggest dog in the yard and everything. And, you know, how he's not going to be hard to find. Just look for the guy in the front row with the sign. Taker, I'm begging you, make me famous! You know what, and I really love this promo. This is DDP at his greatest. I mean, in his prime, you know, maybe a little past his prime, but, you know, definitely, you know, I think he was still a bit peaked from when he had peaked at WCW in the later years of WCW, as opposed to his early years in WCW. Because you gotta remember, DDP was actually a much older wrestler when he finally peaked in WCW. So this is just a great promo, great psychology. You know, in listening to DDP talk about how Jake the Snake Roberts taught him so much, along with Dusty Rhodes, you can definitely see all those teachings come into vision with this promo. So I very much enjoyed it. And again, it was a setup. By the way, your color commentary team for the evening is Paul Heyman and Jim Ross. Reunited. I mean, I'll have to say this. I did not know it then because I had not watched WCW in the early days, so I did not know that Paul Heyman once worked for WCW. I knew he worked for ECW. I didn't know he worked for WCW, and that at one point, him and Jim Ross were a commentary team. So this is a lot of stuff I've actually really only learned very recently, to be quite honest. Because again, those are, you know, from 1985 to 94, my knowledge of wrestling was WWE. Because, again, I was a Hulk Hogan fan. And then I only knew of WCW because Hogan went to WCW. If Hogan never went to WCW, I would have probably never known about WCW. But, yeah. So that is your code commentary. And you know what? They did a absolutely amazing job. I was about to say a word that I could not say. But they did an amazing job. And, you know, definitely with this one where they're like, why would you do these things? I have no answer for you, JR. What drives a man to go insane? Besides chair shots to the head. But our first match officially of the evening is Kurt Angle versus Christian in a King of the Ring semifinal match. Now, this was a pretty good match. I enjoyed it all the way through. Kurt Angle was definitely, you know, the dominant one. Christian was definitely the underdog. Now, of course, this match had shenanigans in its ending, and I love the storyline aspect about this. There was this storyline aspect throughout this King of the Ring with Shane McMahon and Kurt. You know, again, you're cheering for Kurt because he's a WWE guy, but at the same time, he's still an asshole, so you still want to hate him. So you don't know whether to cheer or you know, boo or cheer him. And I thought it was brilliant upon the WWE's ideas at this time. And the ending came where Christian, Shane distracts Kurt, which allows Christian to hit the unprettier, but Shane pulls Christian, you know, out of the ring, you know, or the referee out of the ring, excuse me, I think, one of the two, which leads to Christian yelling at Shane, which gives Kurt the advantage, and he hits the Angle Slam for the win. Kurt Angle advancing in 8 minutes and 17 seconds. Our next match would be the next King of the Ring semifinals match of Edge versus Rhino. This was a really good back and forth contest. I very much enjoyed this. You know, Rhino, at his prime. Edge starting to get into his prime as a singles wrestler. You know, really showing that he could be a good singles wrestler as opposed to just a tag team specialist. Great back and forth. My favorite moment of the match is where they both go for the same maneuver. You know, Rhino goes for his gore, Edge goes for his spear, and they hit. And, you know, I thought it was a great setup. And then, of course, the whole thing where something Rhino does to where he, you know, he puts a, takes the covering off the second turnbuckle, the middle turnbuckle, in one of the corners. And he actually does successfully use it, but it ends up coming back to hurt him. Edge hits the Impaler DDT for the 1-2-3. Edge moves on and the King of the Ring. We then take a break from the King of the Ring, and we have the Dudley Boys of Bubba Ray and D-Von, the new TNA inductees, as they were, and current WWE Tag Team Champions versus Spike Dudley and a partner of his choosing for the WWF at this time Tag Team Champions. The whole storyline here was on, I believe it was SmackDown. It was on SmackDown or Raw. You know, Jericho and Benoit were the Tag Team Champions, which they had won from Austin and Triple H. In the same match in which Triple H tore his quad. And, Austin, of course, being in a triple threat match against both of them for the title in King of the Ring, cost them the title, which Dudley's win. And, of course, they at the same time, they're making fun of Spike, who's dating Molly Holly, who is the cousin of the Holly cousins of Bob and Crash. Hardcore and Crash. I don't know what I call him. You know what? I've been seeing Hardcore Holly so many times in his early career where he's called Bob. I think it just came out. Even though I do believe that is his name. If I am right about that. But, you know, made fun of him that. So he challenges them. Like, who are you going to get? Blah, blah, blah. Who does he get? Oh, he just gets the Intercontinental Champion Kane to be his partner. And you know what? This was a pretty fun match to watch. I mean, the Dudley Boys at the press, you know, it's very reminiscent of their old ECW days to where they make fun of somebody, they're the classic sort of bully villains, and then they get their comeuppance, except here, well, they get their comeuppance in everything except losing the title, which happens when, they're able to get Kane out of the ring, and D-Von counters the Dudley Dog, and is able to reverse Spike into the 3D. But you know what? It was a really good match. A lot of great spots. I actually have to sit here and say that this was probably my third favorite match of the evening. It was just a fun match. Even though it was only 8 minutes and 52 seconds long, it was actually the same amount of time as the Edge Rhino match. Yet it seemed longer. because so much was going on. It was very, very fun to watch. Next, we have our King of the Ring final. We have Edge versus Kurt Angle. Again, a great back and forth match. I mean, this match goes for 10 minutes and 21 seconds. You know, looking at the timeline for a lot of the matches, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. And, you know, this pay-per-view could have easily just been 2 hours, but it's about 2 hours and 30 minutes. There's a good, I would say, you know, just rough estimate, 40 minutes of backstage and, you know, other things going on, which, of course, includes one of them being the fight that we'll get to between DDP and Undertaker. But yeah, this was a just spectacular match. This is actually my second favorite match because I love the storyline. I love the back and forth. Edge and Kurt Angle, you know, held their own, and you know, it was a precursor to the feud that they would have about a year later. About a year later. Because, again, remember we reviewed Backlash 2002, and that's where that feud again started, which, of course, led to Kurt Angle getting his head shaved. But this, this is something that would be used in that whole feud, was Edge beating Kurt Angle for the King of the Ring. So great back and forth here. Just a great wrestling match. You know, Kurt Angle on the top of his game. And then, of course, the storyline where Shane McMahon costs Kurt Angle the King of the Ring by spearing him and allowing Edge to hit the Impaler. Not that Edge was asking for it. Edge wins and ushers in the Age of Awesomeness. So, yeah, I very, very much enjoyed this match. Again, it was a great wrestling match with sort of two sort of conflicting styles in a way. You know, with Edge's sort of straightforward, classic Edge style versus Kurt Angle's amateur wrestler style. Then we had Jeff Hardy versus X-Pac for the WWF Light Heavyweight Championship. It was a fun match. It was a great light heavyweight match. I think it just dragged on a bit, like a couple seconds too long. What the hell am I kidding? It was a good match up until the botch. And, you know, I think they handled it well, but it was a botch in such a way. And if you've ever seen the match, you know, it's one of the simplest things, the, you know, hop over on a corner. But they mess it up and they collide. And they just sit there for a couple of seconds. And the thing about this botch is that it just killed all the momentum in the match. It's a good match, and you know everybody has that botch. But at the same point in time, you know, it really, really hurt their match. And I feel bad for X-Pac and Jeff Hardy, you know? They were having a really good match. It was a great light heavyweight contest. You know, even though X-Pac was dominating most of it. But they have this botch that happens, and then this, you know, it has killed the momentum. You know, even though they had this whole storyline thing that happens in a match very soon after where X-Pac hits the X-Factor, but Jeff Hardy manages to get his foot on the rope, and the, you know, the referee's three count gets called off, and, you know, he goes for another X-Factor. Jeff Hardy counters and, you know, climbs the rope. X-Pac gets up, Jeff Hardy throws him down, hits the Swanton 1-2-3, and picks up the win and retains the title. But all of that happened after the botch, and at that point, all the momentum in the match had been lost. It was one of those botches where they had to do something spectacular to get the momentum back, and they couldn't. So it's a hard match to watch after that botch, because all of the momentum is very much gone. Again, I don't want to sit here and say it was a horrid match, because it wasn't. But it's a bad match in the sense that they have momentum, and then a botch causes them to lose the momentum, and it's a botch in such a way that they had to try to make up for it, and they couldn't. So that brings us our sixth match. I'm thinking about homework. Wonderful. But our sixth match of the evening, Kurt Angle's third match. Now, again, I may mention about the storyline up to this point. And I'm trying to think. Did it happen before? Let me look. Yes, it did. So, before we actually get to the street fight between Kurt Angle and Shane McMahon, because I just remembered something that happened, we had, the whole DDP situation play out. Now, throughout the night, actually, they'd been going to DDP, Paul Heyman even go to interview DDP, and while they're doing an interview, a video appears on screen, and basically, if you don't know the storyline of what DDP was doing, he was basically stalking Sarah, Undertaker's wife. And there had been all these videos that had been appearing on Raw of basically, Sarah at the pool, Sarah at home, apparently Sarah getting out of the shower, or something along those lines, pissing the Undertaker off. And the Undertaker, of course, is not the man you want to piss off. As it turns out, DDP, who, of course, wants Taker to make him famous. So throughout the night, they show these videos of somebody following DDP at his hotel, eating breakfast, getting the car to come to the arena, arriving at the arena, which it turns out is Sarah. How do you feel? And now Taker's going to make you famous. Boom, hit Limp Bizkit's rolling, which God bless Limp Bizkit for allowing WWE to continue to use his music. I don't care what your feelings on his music is. As far as I'm concerned, he's a great guy because he could just as easily say, nope, can't use my music anymore. No, he allows WWE to use his music. Unlike those assholes Metallica. Maybe I'm a bit biased on this subject. Any dang how, hits the music, and it's just a straight out fight. Sarah eventually comes out and is recording it. But it's just this great fight. And again, it's setting up their feud that would continue after the pay-per-view. Just a great little sort of, non-scheduled, unofficial brawl between Taker and DDP. And it was really fun to watch. A lot of great sort of storytelling from DDP in this fight. But as I made mention, the next official match is Kurt Angle versus Shane McMahon in a street fight. Because, Kurt Angle challenges him to it because, Shane's from the mean streets of Gwinnett, Connecticut. Which, I can tell you this, I have been in Gwinnett, Connecticut. There are no mean streets. Okay, I've not actually been in Greenwich. I passed by it on my way to my uncle's house. Which, every time I do, I flip a middle finger off to WWE headquarters. For various reasons, because there had to be something that they deserve it for. Any day now. I love this match. I really do. It's probably the most famous match of this night, for obvious reasons. And I'll get to the famous spots. But, just a great match. Shane McMahon was wonderful. Kurt Angle, showing off his amateur skill, allowing Shane McMahon to mount him, while he's in the guard and everything, and showing how good of an amateur wrestler he is. The kendo sticks, the blood and everything. It's just wonderful to watch. There was great storytelling, and I felt there was great, dialogue in leading towards where they were going. And then, of course, him kicking out a lot of great athletic ability, being showcased. But of course, the spot everybody remembers for. Eventually they make their way down, the entranceway. Kurt slams Shane into the chair pillar. Brings him up. Now, remember when we talked about the botch in the Jeff Hardy X-Pac match, where sometimes there are botches that, just kill the mood of a match? But sometimes if you do it right, and you shake it off, and you play with the botch, you can use a botch to add to the to the just the brutality of a match and add to the storyline and make it that much better. And I think if it had not been for these botches, we might remember the spots, but we not might not remember the match as fondly. And of course, I mean, if you've not heard the story, basically what happens is Kurt takes Shane, and there are these glass planes in on the set. They have like King K-O-R on them. Kurt Angle grabs him and does the belly-belly suplex him through the plane. Hits the plane. It doesn't break. It was supposed to break. But it didn't. Picks Shane up, does it again. Cicely gets him through. And they battle in between this little area. They get to another plane of glass a little bit further down. Belly-to-belly suplex. Glass plane doesn't break. Kurt does it again. Glass plane doesn't break. At this point, somewhere, Dusty Rhodes must be back like, saying, Crockett must have put the piece of wood on there again. For those who don't know that story, the whole Shockmaster finasco, Dusty Rhodes has said he believes that Jim Crockett sabotaged it because in the practice, it was at the wall, but after practice, somebody put a little piece of wood that he claims tripped the Shockmaster, a.k.a. Tugboat, as he was known in the WWE. But yeah, won't break. Finally, Kurt takes him, says, motherfucker, and throws him into the glass, and it breaks. Now, I say that because if it had gone the way it was supposed to, which Kurt Angle, belly to suplex, through the glass, it breaks. Takes him over to the other place, belly to suplex, it breaks. We'd remember the spot as being unique, but we probably wouldn't remember the match as much. In this case, the botch here being faulty equipment led to the match being that much more brutal. Because, I'm going to take you belly to suplex. Glass plane doesn't break. I don't care, motherfucker. I'm going to throw you again. And it breaks. Like, holy fucking shit. Is Shane still fucking alive? It showed off the brutality of Kurt Angle. And it was brilliant. It shows you why Kurt Angle was as good as he is and why he's one of the best wrestlers in the world, in particular when he was at his prime, because he had that ability to think on his feet, and which allowed him to show his brutality, which eventually led to the ring, and they have this board, and almost to understand how he finishes his events, almost inconsequential, considering what just happened, but he puts Shane on the top rope, when he has a board, and delivers Olympic slam from the top rope, pins him 1-2-3. 26-minute match, but it was just packed with action, and it was fun to watch. And by far, it is my match of the evening. With that, let's move on to something that isn't my match of the evening. Or second or third. Let's talk about Steve Austin versus Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho. Now, I will sit here and say this. I actually enjoyed a large majority of the match, about a 99.8% of the match. It was a really, really good match. A bit slow in some places, but still. A lot of great storyline, and the whole thing, throughout the night, the rumor drops that if Benoit or Jericho wins, they're going to defect. Taz tries to interview and ask some questions. Jericho and Benoit sort of play it off, in their own ways, which are just hilarious with Taz interviewing. Austin, at this point is a villain. Like, Vince, you gotta be here. They're gonna, take title. And apparently Vince says, he's gonna come. He has to come from Gwinnett, being there in New Jersey. He's an hour and a half away. So, and of course, Austin doing all his thing, of course, going into the office of William Regal, the new Raw GM, with his assistant Tajiri and everything. So all that's great. The run-in by Booker T was a surprise. Even when I'm like, oh my god, I forgot he debuted here. And it was a great little butt-kicking thing to where, you know, jumps him, delivers the axe kick, and then belly-to-back suplexes him through the Spanish announce table, because it's not a WWE pay-per-view until the Spanish announce table is broken. But great back and forth. Benoit and Jericho were just spectacular through the match. My issue with the match is its ending. And, you know, quite frankly, it seemed out of left field. It was... I know there are people like, well, it was shocking. Yeah, it was shocking, but it was out of left... It was shocking in a way that... Like, really? That's how it ends? And it's not so much that it ended with, you know... By the way, to explain the ending, Jericho, you know, Benoit has Jericho on the top rope and delivers a top rope belly-to-back suplex. And then Austin crawls over and covers Benoit for the 1-2-3. But it's how long it took for that to happen. You know, Benoit and Jericho, you know, Benoit suplexes Jericho, and it's probably a good minute before Austin makes his way over to Benoit and just drapes an arm, and it's 1-2-3. And it was just shocking in how it happened. You know? You know, it's like, wait, it's over? And you're expecting a big climax for the match, and it's just over. And to me, that just hurts the, you know, you really want a good climax to your match. You know, you want to give, you know, to continue with the terminology here, you really want to give a good money shot for the audience to just, you know, latch on to. Hello, ladies, on the Venus. And right now, TWK needs to take a shower. The Troll of Trolls is back on his throne. But no, but yeah, it's just over. And for me, that really hurt the match. I don't like that. I need that money shot there. You know, it's... There's a mountain of ways I could probably, you know, metaphor that thing. But yeah, it was just over. Just over, and it's like I felt something was missing from it. You know, it felt like, you know, you're waiting for Vince. Oh, Vince could be there, and Vince never comes, or whatever. And just there's something missing at the end of that match that, you know, felt empty. Now it's probably my fourth favorite match of the night. At the same point in time, that ending is what keeps it from being out of the top three. So pound for pound, I thought this was really enjoyable pay-per-view. I very much enjoyed it. There's so, you know, so much storyline. This was really a pay-per-view about storylines as much as it was about making good matches. And for the most part, every match that I saw was a good match, with the exception of the Jeff Hardy and Xbox match. And again, that was because of the aforementioned botched, which killed the mood. So before I go over favorite matches, let's go over favorite spots. Spot number 3 would be Edge and Rhino hitting the spear and gore at the same time. Spot number 2 would probably be Booker T's, you know, interference in the triple threat match, delivering the axe to Stone Cold and the belly-to-back suplex through the Spanish announce table. But by bar none, my favorite spot, as I think it's everybody, is Kurt Angle attempting and finally succeeding to throw Shane McMahon through the glass plane. And as for favorite matches, number 3, Dudley Boyz versus Kane and Spike for the title, tag team titles. Edge versus Kurt Angle in the King of the Rings finals. And Kurt Angle versus Shane in the street fight. Bar none, this is a very, very enjoyable pay-per-view. And even though the Jeff Hardy Xbox match is hurt by the botch, it's still, up to a point, very enjoyable. You know, at the end of the day, if I had paid $60, I would have felt I would have gotten my money's worth. You know, a lot of good matches. It really showcased the up-and-comers of, you know, Kurt, Edge, Rhino, Christian. It showed them perfectly. Jeff Hardy, even to an extent. It really showcased Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho, and of course, them as main event players. Of course, the unfortunate thing that would happen in this pay-per-view is that Chris Benoit would, you know, he would suffer a neck injury that would put him out of action for a year. I'm sorry, I was stalling to find the word suffering. He suffered career halting, for that matter, neck injury after the triple threat match. And he would be out for a year. So that's sort of another bad thing about that triple threat, unfortunately, after the fact. But it was a really good pay-per-view, and from start to finish, I was thoroughly enjoyed, even though the ending to that triple threat was very shocking and just kind of left me cold. But still, I enjoyed it. Still, I think it was a very, very good pay-per-view. So, at the end of the day, King of the Ring 2001 gets a 4 out of 5 from me. Very enjoyable. I think it's one of those pay-per-views you have to watch. Very historic, because a lot of important story elements also happen in that pay-per-view. So, that is it for CMG's Wrestling Reviews. At least on this episode. I'll get to next week in a second. But remember, if you have any emails, comments, or anything that you want to say about the show, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can contact us through email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact us on our Stitcher account, which you can find by going to www.stitcher.com. That's STICHTER.com. Search for the Absolution Network. Like our, you know, page. You know, add us to your playlist and leave us a comment there. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to www.facebook.com and searching for the Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there. We are actually the, you know, our two Absolution Networks. We're the one with the logo of the A and E N in the circle. And, of course, you can always leave a comment right here on the site, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content, which, of course, includes, right here on the Absolution Network's Tom's Prerogative, the anime cast, the Mega, with, you know, Relic and his friends, the Mega Mix podcast featuring Edwind. And, of course, we have some new contributors, you know, Shin Tiger Curl, you know, in his videos, which will, you know, appear when they appear, when he gets the chance. And, of course, we have a brand new author who will hopefully be putting out some content soon in John Ramos. I met him at Anime Next. I invited him on. And he'll hopefully be doing Toku stuff. So look out for that. You can also check out the Shaft Plus podcast with Gene and Chris that you can find at www.shaftplus.com. Of course, my Tokyo SOS A Godzilla podcast, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcasting network featuring CMG's Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and, of course, Spectacular Webs that you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. So, that is it for this episode. Of course, also remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. That, of course, includes Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas and Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher and the Major Spoilers Podcast, and Scott Gardner's 2-2 Freaks Podcasting Network. But our very next episode, folks, we're going to have some guests. Not just one, not just two, but three. At least at this point, three guests. Yes, it's going to be epic. We're going to have Maddie J, we're going to have TWK, and of course, my good friend Corey Wilson is going to be on the show. Because we're going to sit down, all four of us, and maybe a fifth if he contacts us. I sent him an email. But all four of us are going to sit down, and we're going to review King of the Ring 1998. Because such an epic pay-per-view requires an epic podcasting panel. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me, CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, bring me down to negativity. But I believe, yes, I believe, I say that I believe. Stand on one feet, one knee, brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in. I believe Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in. I believe out of darkness comes light, twilight and through the heights, crown lights burning up out of through the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. And what's this feeling? My love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be for hole in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legs and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them mothers live that fast life, but just dream.